WNJC, 1360 AM, Washington Township,
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station, broadcasting online at WNJC1360.com, a service of Forsyth Broadcasting.
Dan Haggerty here. Welcome to the Bear Haggerty Offense. With Dan, you there?
Hey, all
right, what's going on?
Beautiful 55 degree day here in southern Jersey. It's amazing. What kind of weather we've got?
Really? Wait a minute.
That's right. As they say, you don't need a weatherman to tell which way the wind's blowing.
Has the authority to control those elections. That's why this is going through a Georgia state court.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And we've never had anything like this in our history before. I mean, this is really new territory we're striding down at this point. And, you know, to really get a good picture of this, we really need to have an expert. We really need someone who's been dealing with this for a while.
Well, unfortunately, I've been dealing with this for almost 4 years already. So, but aside from me, there are other experts. There are people who've been more in the trenches than I've even been. Our guest is a lifelong resident of Pennsylvania. He served 33 years in the U.S. Naval Reserves as both a commissioned officer and an enlisted person. He joined the Navy in 1962, reached the rank of full commander in 1992, and retired in 1995. He holds a Bachelor's of Science in Electrical Engineering and a Bachelor of Arts in Economics. Today's guest took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and feels he has a duty to continue to honor that oath. In 2009, he filed suit against Barack Obama, maintaining that he, Barack Obama, as required by Article 2, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution, was not a natural-born citizen, and that nobody in the electoral process challenged or investigated Barack Obama's eligibility to hold the office of President of the United States. His case against Barack Obama made its way to the United States Supreme Court, ending with the words, "Cert denied." Commander Kirchner continues to be a central figure in the quest to get to the truth about our putative president. Welcome, Commander Kirchner.
Hey, glad to be here. Hello. Hello, Commander. How are you?
Hi, Dan.
How are you?
I'm great.
So, Commander, you've been at this for quite a while, I think as long as I've been, maybe even a little bit longer.
I got in and interested in actively getting involved in challenging and looking for more information on this unknown commodity called Barack Hussein Obama II, and about mid-July of 2008.
Right. That's about when I realized what was going on. And that at every juncture, I thought that this was going to be caught, and it was just something that was a housekeeping measure, and that if there was a real issue here, that the systems would do what the systems should do.
Commander, let me ask you a question. Why did you file this lawsuit? What was your reasoning for doing this?
Well, since July of 2008, we've been trying to address this in various steps along the way. He was challenged by an attorney filing in Philadelphia, Attorney Berg, even before the convention nominated Obama, and that lawsuit went nowhere. The courts dismissed it on standing and not being right, because he hadn't won the election, that kind of argument. And then, of course, everybody was saying, well, maybe he won't win the election. He can't win the election. Well, you know, he wound up getting nominated, and he won the election. Then we thought the Electoral College would stop this, insist that he prove he's eligible under the Constitution and he's qualified, because the 20th Amendment of the Constitution requires that the president be qualified. But the Electoral College didn't do anything, because they're hamstrung by all the state laws. The political parties basically turned the Electoral College into a rubber stamp for the popular vote. They want to make this country a democracy and not a republic.
Yes, a subtle difference.
And there's a big difference in the form of government, whereas, you know, the republic, you've got 50 elections in 50 states, and the electors from the state that are elected then are supposed to choose a president. Well, they no longer have any authority left in at least 27 states. They have to vote per the popular vote controlled by the political party, and most of these electors are just simply party.
So they rubber stamp
the election. So they
could use no discretion, basically, independent discretion.
Exactly, and even though they take an oath to support and defend the Constitution when they become an elector, they just throw that out the window. The party lawyers tell them, nope, you got to vote for the state law or you will be prosecuted. Now, that is corrupting what the founders intended by making the Electoral College function there to protect. The Electoral College was to protect the system of government from a runaway, pure democratic, mob rule type vote that a person gets, that isn't qualified, gets elected. I mean, you could say, like, Mickey Mouse, you know, would win the election. You know, obviously he can't serve.
Well, I happen to know Mickey Mouse was born on U.S. soil, and both of his parents were U.S. citizens when he was born.
That's good. Now we're getting into the natural-born citizenship, the true meaning of that.
So
let me just finish. So, of course, the Electoral College didn't stop him. Then we thought that Congress would stop him, because Congress has a duty in the joint session to elect a qualified or confirm a qualified candidate. And they never even made any attempt at all to see if he's not a single objection was raised, because a fix was in. The Republican Party and Democratic Party both want to abrogate Article 2, Section 1, and they didn't raise any objections.
Commander Kerr, let me ask you a question about Dick Cheney, who was actually the one who, I guess, would have been taking the vote.
Mm-hmm. He was president of the Senate, which runs the joint session.
Right. So now, my understanding is that he by statute, I believe, I think it's beyond tradition, I think it's by statute, is supposed to actually prompt the people who are voting in Congress whether they have any objection. Kind of like at a wedding, does anybody here object?
Yeah, for each and every state's votes, he's supposed to call for objections to that state's votes.
Right, there's supposed to be a specific prompt as
opposed to... Specific prompt.
And that didn't happen.
Didn't happen. First time in the history of the joint sessions. What he did, he let all the votes come in from all the states, and then at the end, do I hear any objections to all of them as a group? And he said, hearing none, bang, the session is closed. And you remember Pelosi jumped out of her seat, started clapping, and they completely violated statutory law, and that was part of my lawsuit.
Let me get this right. You're saying that after all the votes are counted and tallied, the president of the Senate, at the time Dick Cheney, is supposed to interrogate each state.
As the states present their votes. Alabama, we have
right.
the votes from Alabama. They bring them forward, they look at the paperwork, it says it's in order or whatever, and then they say, are there any objections to the votes from the
Who
state?
Who says that?
The president of the Senate.
That was what I said. He interrogates the state as they prevent their votes and asks them, do you have any objections? But he didn't do that.
He doesn't interrogate the state. He interrogates all the sitting representatives and senators there who represent those states to say, do you in Ohio have any objections to the votes from Alabama?
Right.
And they did that when they challenged George Bush. People got up and said, I challenged the votes in Florida.
Oh, in 2000?
Yeah, and they got up in 2000, and then the next one they said, I challenged the votes in Ohio, when the Ohio votes were called.
Right. So this is something that's supposed to occur.
Yes.
And it did not occur.
This was one more fast track railroad
to get it over with.
Well, one more safeguard that provided no safety in it.
Right. And this was not done for Obama, you say?
Not done for Obama.
Okay. That's very interesting.
Commander, what actually precipitated you filing your lawsuit, which we'll get into in a little more detail in a couple minutes, but what specifically precipitated? You mentioned Phil Berg, who was the attorney in Philadelphia, who I believe...
Is a Democrat.
Was a Democrat. Mm-hmm. He actually was the, if I remember correctly, the assistant attorney general of the state of Pennsylvania at one point. So this guy is no lightweight. And he was a Hillary Clinton supporter, and he challenged Obama's right to be essentially on the ballot and his eligibility to be president. But aside from that, what precipitated? I mean, obviously, many of us had concerns at that time, but you took the step to file a lawsuit. What gave rise to that?
Well, along the way, you also heard that Donna Friel in New Jersey brought a lawsuit, too, against the Secretary of State, and then...
an attorney in New Jersey.
Yes, and then, of course, Orly Tate brought a lawsuit out in California against the Secretary of State. Now, those two didn't go anywhere because they were suing the Secretary of State, and they successfully used the court system to say that the Secretary of State has no power to undo the election and all that, just a minister and that kind of thing. They gamed the court system a long time. But anyway, all these cases...
The judge ruled that they had no standing for other reasons.
Right,
okay.
Right. But Berg was the only one that sued Obama directly at this point. So, okay, now we're up at the end of the year, and I'm saying, oh, my God, if the Congress does not raise objections, we're going to have an ineligible president, a fugitive president in office. And I was thinking this over in my heart and soul.
This was after the election that you started getting
This is the end of December, after all the lawsuits failed, Electoral College failed, but before... the Congress met to confirm him, and
right.
I'm saying somebody got to do something beyond this, and I came up with the idea of suing Congress itself if they confirmed him without using the 20th Amendment, properly using the 20th Amendment, which is you must have a qualified candidate for president. It says in there the president must be qualified. So he's not qualified.
Qualified per the eligibility requirements in Article 2.
Right.
Per the Constitution.
It doesn't say qualified per the Constitution, but that's implied.
Right.
Because the only qualifications for election, for sitting in the office of president, are you be 35 years old, 14 years of resident of the United States, and be a natural-born citizen of the United States. So I decided that we got to get another lawsuit going, challenge to actually sue Congress and Obama if they don't do their duty.
So let me ask you something, just by as far as background. I mean, before this, were you very politically active? Were you involved with lawsuits? Were you
not involved with lawsuits at all?
Okay, so it's not like this was a hobby of yours to work over politicians who didn't fit your.
I was active in my community. I volunteered in various political appointments and things like that, and. I've always been interested in national events and current events, and I just felt this was a wrong. I mean, I was a commission officer, took an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, but I never thought I'd have to be fighting a domestic enemy. So I had to look myself in the mirror and say, Charlie, are you just going to ignore your oath? And just something inside me was calling me to saying, you can't. You cannot let this pass. If Congress confirms him, well, I was trying to get other people to bring more lawsuits. Somebody saying, Charlie, nobody wants to do it. If nobody does it, you got to do it. I felt, like the story in the Bible of Jonah and the whale.
You felt called.
He was called to go preach in, what was that city, Nineveh?
Nineveh,
okay. That's what I actually felt, that I was being called to do this. And the more I resisted it, the more I felt tormented that I have to do this. Nobody else is going to do it. Then when I finally found a lawyer to bring the case, and I shopped, it took me about a dozen turndowns. I mean, I went to the Heritage Society, the Judicial Watch. I went to national lawyers,
all
local
the
lawyers,
conservative type,
the so-called conservatives.
You would think would have an interest in getting
no interest, no answers. Mm-hmm. I finally found an attorney willing to do it, Attorney Mario Puzo, and he did it pro bono. But as soon as we filed that lawsuit, which was in the early hours before Obama was sworn in, because it was important to me, then this was my thinking, that we had to file this before he's sworn in, but after the political process was over with the joint session. So at that point, he's still a private citizen. He was not vested with the powers of the presidency, but the political process was over. So all the legal arguments about political issue were gone. Judicial ripeness was now judicially ripe. And that's why I brought the suit. And I was trying to get lawyers to do this for me, and Mario accepted it. We put the case together and filed it before Obama was sworn in. So we had the only case suing Obama directly as a private citizen prior to him becoming the president and after the political process was
so,
over.
So, Commander,
so you sued the president-elect.
That's right.
Okay, not the president. That's an interesting distinction. I wasn't aware of that.
Right.
So, Commander, so you filed suit in district court. Federal District Court?
Right.
Okay, so you went...
Now, that's interesting about that. We filed in Newark, and magically, the chief judge was in Newark was selected to have my case. And that's magically, within 2 or 3 hours, it was transferred to Trenton to some other judge.
Mm-hmm.
And we never could have gotten an answer from the court as to how that happened and why it happened. But I think it was transferred to a judge that may have been...
More open,
Obama supporter type judge.
Not that there's not a lot of Obama supporter type judges in Newark.
Even though the guy in Trenton was appointed by a Republican, you know about the word rhino, don't you?
We've discussed that.
There's some rumors that I've heard that this judge that got my case ultimately used to be part of the Students for Democratic Society chapter.
Oh, Bill Ayers.
Bill Ayers.
We know a little bit about Bill Ayers, too, don't we, Dan?
Yeah. So I've never been able to prove that, but he did deliver the eulogy to the engineering professor at Princeton University, that my judge did, deliver the eulogy to the engineering professor at Princeton, who was the chapter, what do they call it when a college professor organizes a chapter?
Sponsor.
Faculty guider or whatever, for local Students for Democratic Society chapter at Princeton. My judge gave the eulogy for
Communist Students
Society. Yeah, and my judge gave the eulogy for that.
Really?
That's
not a good sign.
So this is a good sign.
This is at the state level now.
Federal.
Federal District Court.
Okay.
Okay, so what happened? Let's not get too tied up in the details of the case. So what happened at that district level?
They dismissed it on the basis of standing. No citizen has the right to challenge the eligibility of a president.
Now what was your argument on standing? Briefly,
That First of all, I have an unalienable right as a citizen of the United States to stand up and support and defend the Constitution, that I also, as a commissioned naval officer who took a specific oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, have a right to stand up and defend that. Mm-hmm. And my attorney brought in all kinds of legal arguments that that this case is it should be granted standing because it's sort of like the Lujan case. In other words, just because one person... Because many people are injured doesn't mean you weren't injured. In other words, they tried to make it like
you needed a specific injury.
Right.
There was no injury that was peculiar to you.
Right. The rules of the court are usually stacked for physical damages or monetary damages. That's what these rules are set up for. This is a particular case in that this was a constitutional issue, and that's what the role of the court is there for.
Okay, so let's move on. So the first level district court got dismissed, no standing. Then
right.
They mentioned
standing and political issue.
That it was a political issue, so the judiciary shouldn't have
gotten involved. Specifically said that if you don't like the president, go vote him out next time.
Beautiful. Okay, so then.
And it isn't that I don't like the president, it's a constitutional issue.
Okay, so then we're past district court, then you went to the United States
Appeals
Court of Appeals.
Yes.
Okay,
and
then what happened?
We appealed the decision of the district court that we didn't have standing, and we appealed there and argued it back and forth, and then the court there upheld the lower court and tried to sanction my attorney for bringing the case as frivolous because Attorney Berg had filed in the Third Circuit... Because Attorney Berg had filed in the Third Circuit, they said that this case was virtually identical, and therefore it was a frivolous attempt to do the same thing. But Attorney Berg's case was filed against a candidate running for election, and I was suing a president-elect.
Right.
And the court said specifically in the Berg case that you have to wait until he won the election before you could even bring this case. It wasn't right.
And then they moved the goalpost.
Moved the goalpost. So they affirmed the lower court, and they tried to sanction my attorney for even bringing the case and assess costs against me.
Not like that would have a chilling effect against the legal parties, right?
But my attorney, Mario Puzo, being very, very sharp, very experienced lawyer, citizenship expert, fired back at the court a brief saying, if you're going to assess me damages for bringing a frivolous case, it's the duty of the defendants to mitigate damages. And they could have done that by producing the said documents we requested as part of this case. So therefore, if we're going to have, I demand a hearing, and I want the defendants to bring in the documents to mitigate the damages so the court can assess fair damages, if they're going to assess damages.
Right.
Immediately the court dropped the case.
Yeah,
really?
Surprise there.
A big surprise.
Okay, so we move. So the district court basically again, Kirchner v. Obama, they dismissed.
Kirchner v. Obama and Congress.
Okay, and Congress. Court of Appeals basically dismissed it again, or whatever.
Court of Appeals affirmed the lower court.
Right, they affirmed the lower court.
Let me back up. I did have co-complainants, so we should say et al.
Right. Okay.
And Obama and Congress et al. I named Nancy Pelosi and Dick Cheney.
Right, right.
So it wasn't a political suit.
Right.
I named both leaders of both parties in that joint session.
That's a good point, Charles, because a lot of the spin in the media now is that the quote-unquote birther movement is a Republican movement. But in fact, as you pointed out, the first person to sue Obama was a Democratic attorney by the name of Philip Berg. But what is forgotten by most people is that the original birther group was the New York Times going after John McCain on his citizenship. And if you look back in some of the books that have been published, you'll see there was a lot of talk, a lot of discussion, and a lot of newsprint spent on the issue of John McCain and his eligibility. So
that's correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that would come as a shock to very few people, I think, understand that.
Absolutely. The birthers are said to be Republicans, not the case. We're here on WNJC 1360 AM. This is the Bear Haggerty Offensive, and we're talking with Commander Charles Kirchner, the man who sued Obama and Congress. And we're now at the point where we're moving on from the appellate court, I guess, and you went up to the Supreme Court.
Yes, I did, and I'd like to differentiate a bit here. I'm a constitutionalist. I do not accept the term birther for my type of lawsuit, but... the birther is more or less just on the birth certificate, but it's been smeared by the press on anybody who challenges Obama. So we went to the Supreme Court, and that was an interesting adventure there, because we found out that when you go to the Supreme Court, you cannot submit filings electronically, a PDF file or a Word document. You got to get it printed up on special paper and special booklets, and it's got to be a certain type, font, and everything else. And it's a kind of a, I call it maybe a racket, you know, that the court would only accept printed bound document filings. And they only serve, it's only a certain number of printers that can do it right. And if you don't do it right, the clerk of the courts, the Supreme Court, can just throw the whole filing out just because you don't have the right type font. So anyway, that cost us almost $5,000 to get 40 copies of the the petition for writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court.
Well, it certainly serves as a screening process to keep people out of the court. So Commander Kircher, so it goes up to the U.S. Supreme. I don't mean to rush. It's just that we don't
have
long. We want to get into some other things that are happening right now.
And September 30th, we submitted our petition to the court, Supreme Court.
2010, right, okay.
That's over a year after my case.
Okay, let's just very quickly just get into the, and the issues essentially were boiled down.
Right.
There was natural-born citizen, and the
read the four questions in the first page there, Dan, the four questions we asked. You're not supposed to ask a lot of questions to get rid of certiorari. So
right.
We asked four questions. Read the four questions.
Questions presented. One, whether petitioners sufficiently articulated a case or controversy against respondents, which gives them Article III standing to make their Fifth Amendment due process and equal protection claims against them. Two, whether putative President Obama can be an Article II, quote, natural-born citizen, close quote, if he was born in the United States to a United States citizen mother and a non-United States citizen British father, and under the British Nationality Act 1948, he was born a British citizen. Question three, whether putative President Obama and Congress violated petitioner's Fifth Amendment due process rights to life, liberty, safety, security, tranquility, and property, and Ninth Amendment rights by Congress, failing to assure them pursuant to the 20th Amendment that Obama qualified as an Article II, quote, natural-born citizen, close quote, before confirming his electoral votes, and by Obama refusing to conclusively prove that he is a, quote, natural-born citizen, unquote. Question four, whether Congress violated petitioners' rights under the Fifth Amendment to equal protection of their life, liberty, safety, security, tranquility, and property by investigating and confirming the, quote, natural-born citizen, unquote, status of presidential candidate John McCain, but not that of presidential candidate Barack Obama. Those are the four questions.
I think my attorney summed up my position very clearly there. Now, on page 36, I wanted to point out something else in the petition. If I can just find it real quick here. This is very interesting. We also, on page 36, asked Justice Sonia Sotomayor and Justice Alina Kagan to recuse themselves for having a financial conflict of interest in this case because they were appointed by Obama and their very jobs depended on the outcome of this case. Guess what they did?
They were absolutely.
They voted. They didn't recuse themselves. And you know why they didn't recuse themselves? Their votes were needed to keep this petition from being accepted, because with nine people voting, the rule of nine applies at the Supreme Court. I have a copy of the Supreme Court practice book there, which means you need one less than a majority to forward the case for a hearing, and then you need one more than the majority to win. Five to win, four to forward the case. So anyway, they
forward the case, meaning to even for them to hear the
to
case.
Hear the case.
Merits, right.
So with a rule of nine, they needed four votes to go forward, you know. And with the two justices recused themselves, the rule of seven comes in. It's in the Supreme Court practices, too. Now they only need three justices to agree to take the case for a hearing. Three out of seven, one less than the majority, and then four to win the case when you actually fight the case. I heard that the scuttlebutt in the Supreme Court was that there were three justices who were willing to tackle this issue, but they never could get the fourth vote with nine justices. They needed four. With seven justices, they only needed three. And I think Roberts was the justice who did not want this case to be heard. But anyway,
well, he swore in this to usurper twice.
Right, so to avoid the risk that three justices by themselves and that secret confidence they have to decide what case they're going to take could get this petition heard, they voted and broke ethics. The Supreme Court's rules and ethics that they put out that all the other courts have to follow, they broke him themselves because they had a direct financial interest in this. And of course, Kagan was the Kagan was a solicitor.
Solicitor General. That's right. She actually
defended him.
Represented Obama on the lawsuits which were against him. So, I mean, and as you mentioned, they would have presumably, if Obama were removed from office, his appointments of them would have been invalidated.
Right. And so we asked in our pleading that they recuse themselves, and they thumbed their nose at their own ethics of the court.
Recusing themselves is just that. It's within their discretion.
Exactly. There's nobody to appeal to at the Supreme Court.
And interestingly, I remember when the ruling came down, I looked at the cases before and after your case, Commander Kirchner, and on that sheet that came out, there were recusals of various justices recused themselves before your case, after their case. It's something that's commonly...
In fact, immediately before my case.
Commonly done, and they recused refused to recuse.
And this is a direct financial interest. They're very salaried with dependents. Now, what they did, a lower court judge at the federal level could be removed.
Of course. And the ruling would be reversed.
That's the imperial court system we have. Now, you mentioned that, Charles, about the recusal and how they would have lost their
voting rights.
Well, they could have...
They risked putting my petition in the hands of three justices instead of four votes. Instead of needing 40, they only needed three.
Now, if this case were to go forward, and this is the perceived threat to Kagan and Sotomayor, if the case goes forward and you prevail, then theoretically they lose their position on the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
But, you know, this brings up something else that's so profound about the implications of the birther issues, let's call it.
Constitutionalist.
The constitutional issues, you're right. The upside of this, for those who are in favor of pursuing this, is that almost everything Obama has done would be invalid. Is that not correct?
Yes, except my attorney has addressed this and called it the de facto laws or whatever. They wouldn't necessarily have to undo every single little minuscule little thing he did, but does anything like the health care, the Obamacare...
lifetime appointments.
They would all be null and void. Well, if he was proved ineligible and removed from office because he's not eligible, theoretically everything he signed would be
invalid.
Argument, in other words, to not totally disrupt the government, they would have addressed the major issues that he did that were very disruptive.
How about international treaties?
They'd all be gone.
From the administration's perspective and the perspective of his supporters, this would be a constitutional cataclysm.
It would be a constitutional crisis that we haven't faced since the Civil War. In other words, it would be of that magnitude.
Of their creation.
Of their creation.
Let's not get too far into this, into the details of this. We could have Commander Kirchner again and get into these details.
They did not take the case because Kagan and Sotomayor voted, and we were denied certiorari.
Denied. Like I said, it's stamped cert or denied. Now,
and what did Justice Thomas say to the committee of Congress?
He said to Congressman Jose Serrano, a congressman from the Bronx, he said to him during an exchange, in a rare moment of candor, and I'm not going to give you the whole context here, but he said, regarding the natural born citizen issue, he said, well, we're avoiding that issue.
We're avoiding those cases.
And everybody laughed.
Okay, let's get back to more current events here. Commander, let me ask you, is there anything new that's happened?
Hold on, Dan. I just want to ask him one more question about, very briefly, Commander, tell us how you felt about the political / judicial system before your case was cert denied and after. Just compare and contrast.
I thought that the courts were very political, but up until the level of the Supreme Court, I had high respect for the Supreme Court yet and thought that at that level that the Constitution was still looked at and still supported and still believed in. I was sorely disappointed at what happened. I was really, really... I said, we don't have a country left. I mean, when two justices cannot recuse themselves for personal financial interests, and they just totally wouldn't take a case like this, and then I hear a justice say that they're avoiding it on purpose, I personally think Thomas wants to take the cases. I don't think he's avoiding it. I think Roberts is avoiding it, the Chief Justice. And, of course, he's using his influence to...
Well, I mean, he himself has, a massive conflict of interest when you realize that he, in fact, swore Barack Obama in as president, not only once, but twice, because Obama slash Roberts blew the oath the first time.
And Roberts met personally...
Privately
with Obama...
While there were pending cases regarding Obama, before the Supreme Court, totally against.
No, my case hadn't been filed yet, but I think Orley was one of Orley's cases was before me.
So to say that you're disappointed in our.
I feel like I'm living in a banana republic now.
Well, go ahead, tell us about it.
And people say, why isn't the Republican Party doing anything about this? They are as guilty as Obama is and a Democrat for abrogating the Constitution. Abrogate Article 2, Section 1, because they want to run people like McCain, who was born in Panama. You got Jindal, who has parents who were not citizens when he was born. You got Rubio, who's a born Cuban citizen. Those parents were not citizens when he was born.
So
and I've even heard rumors of Rick Santorum. His father was from Italy, and the family won't produce the naturalization papers. They say they have them, but they won't produce them. Why?
Well, they have a good precedent now with Obama.
Well,
that's a terrible precedent for all of our in the future.
So the Republican Party is in the tank on ignoring Article 2, Section 1. And there were, like, before Obama ran, there were, like, 10 cases or 8 or 10 cases in Congress that he tried to amend the Constitution or change the meaning of
natural rights. Not that he did, but that people...
Remember, they want to get rid of it. But they know they can't get rid of it. But the people won't let it happen. So an amendment won't pass. Because it's a national security issue. Who wants a foreign national father, a president with a foreign national father, being a president of the United States in command of our military?
The founding fathers certainly did.
They did not want that.
Your whole case was premised on natural-born citizen being defined as being born on U.S. soil to two citizen parents who were citizens at the time of the subject's birth.
Such that the person born has no allegiance to any foreign power. That's the whole point. A second-generation American is the only office in the United States, president and, of course, the vice president, where you have to have sole allegiance to the United States by birth. That means be a second generation. The first generation can come from Italy, get naturalized, and they can be a senator, a rep, a congressman, or governor.
Basically anything other than president or vice. They can do anything in the country.
Right.
Let me ask you this.
The children of the citizens are the ones who become the president. The children of the citizens.
What happens in the case that the president and the vice president are killed and you go to the Speaker of the House, who's not a natural-born citizen? What happens?
Yeah, I think that
bypass the
that
speaker?
They need another amendment to the Constitution that required anybody who specifically state that anybody who is in line to be the president has to be a natural
citizen. Well, presumably that could go pretty far, but I think Dan's probably, I bet they would
pass over him.
If we had a system that worked and that was actually honest, that cared about this issue and that was honest about the definition.
That would filter people
that
out.
What Dan just said, I think, might be what course of action they would take. I mean, obviously we're speculating, but if the Speaker of the House didn't meet the eligibility requirements, then they'd go down the line to
They'd have to pass over this person.
Right.
Well, Speaker Boehner has been a disappointment on this because he was put in power by the Tea Party, and I've written to him and asked him to do something about this, done nothing.
Yeah. Well, he was in Congress before the Tea Party, but of course he achieved the position of Speaker due to Tea Party votes,
and then he ignored him.
That's been a huge disappointment.
Took a majority. You mentioned Marco Rubio briefly. Get into what's going on with Marco Rubio.
I've been prior to May of 2011 for about almost a year. I've been researching his genealogy because that's my hobby, genealogy, and I was trying to get the data on his apparent citizenship as
well.
When and where.
It's more than your hobby. You've been doing this for 40 years.
Yeah, right. It's a major hobby. Anyway, he refused to provide you information. Calls to us. To his office, emails to his office. I've had friends who are also lawyers and friends who are not just calling, emailing for a period of a year, and he was ignoring this. And I finally said to myself, I got to get to the bottom of this. So I went to the National Archives and found the papers for naturalization for Marco Apuzzo's parents, and it turns out
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio. Yeah, I get Mario and Marco and. You know.
sorry.
Marco Rubio's parent, who was named Mario.
That's true.
I found a naturalization paper, and lo and behold, they naturalized 4 years after Marco was born. So he was not; they were not citizens when born, and therefore Marco was a Cuban citizen by birth by his parents, and a native-born 14th Amendment citizen, not a natural-born.
Because he was born in Miami.
He was born in Miami.
So he had effectively dual citizenship.
Absolutely, he had dual citizenship. And now the other thing I found out is in the...
And you're sure about this?
Absolutely positive. I can show you the... you go on my blog of 22nd May, you can see a picture of the naturalization papers. So anyway, I put this out, and but then I found out in reading further in the paper documentation that his parents came here on a work visa like 2 years prior to the Communist Revolution takeover of Castro, and he was posting in his Senate bio that his parents came here to escape Fidel Castro's takeover of Cuba so that was off by 2 years. So there was a misstatement of his
the parents' intention.
Yeah, because I think he was trying to gain political favor with
the
refugees.
Sure, among the Cubans. But you know, they didn't know Castro was going to take over till basically like New Year's Eve. I mean, people thought Batista was going to hold them off right till the end, so that's a ridiculous claim.
His parents came to the USA before Fidel Castro landed in Cuba to start the revolution. Do you understand that? His parents were in the USA before Castro even came from Mexico.
All right, before they even knew the name of Castro, probably.
Well, they knew of Castro, but he didn't have an active revolution going.
Right. He didn't...
So they came here for work, and legally, of course. Yeah. But he's not now. He can be an excellent senator.
He could be anything except president or vice president.
And I call upon him, if he's listening to this show, have a news conference, and go out there and say you would like to be president, but you know you're constitutionally not eligible, and therefore you want to make this known. And by the way, Obama isn't either. If he would say that, he'd be a national hero.
Yes, real stand-up guy to do that. But I don't think he's a stand-up guy as much as our guest.
Well, interestingly, I'm sorry, Dan, but he had the opportunity, was it yesterday?
Yeah, on Hannity.
Yesterday on Hannity, Sean Hannity's
radio
program, one of our competitors, and Marco Rubio was on the program, and Sean Hannity asked him right at the end of the interview, so what do you think of these, what do you think of these idiot birthers? Marco Rubio... Basically, he didn't say, well, these guys are all off, there's no issue here with Obama, there's no issue here with me, I'm a natural-born citizen, and everybody acknowledges I was born in Miami. What he did, he kind of got around the issue by saying, I don't believe anybody has challenged my eligibility for being a U.S. Senator, which is the truth.
That's all he said?
But he, basically, I mean, I believe, I heard it secondhand, but...
He basically said he wasn't running, and unfortunately, that he feels he's qualified to be
Senator, but he didn't address the issue.
No,
that's kind of a weak defense.
He didn't go after the quote birthers because he knows they have a point. He's an attorney. He was I think he was Attorney General of Florida or Assistant Attorney General.
He was Speaker of the House.
Speaker of House in Florida. I mean, he knows this issue, and
that's essentially no controlling.
And obviously, the Republicans are pushing him hard. Mark Levin, unfortunately, who should know better. Is pushing him hard for months, and
Hannity pushed him on his TV show last night, and Joe Farah, World Net Daily, was on and pointed out that he's not a natural-born citizen, so at least that got out there. But, as far as Rubio, I'm the one that broke that story to the whole world, because I did the basic genealogical and National Archive research. So it was broken on my blog at about 2 p.m. on May 22nd.
So you mentioned Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana. He's basically, without going through all of his, he's in the same position, except that his parents were from India.
That's right.
So everything else is analogous.
Now, we also have Governor Nick Haley of South Carolina, I believe it is, or is it North Carolina? South Carolina?
South, yes.
Yeah, she hasn't answered questions either. Her parents were from India, too, and we haven't been able to get the answers there. And I've been after Rick Santorum, too, but he isn't answering. So.
Yeah, we're going to get into Rick Santorum, because that's kind of a developing story.
Commander, you mentioned your blog. I want to tell the audience...
Now, just don't get me wrong. I want to say one thing. I'm not against people who are immigrants, legal immigrants. This is a constitutional issue. They have to be a constitutionally qualified, they have to be a natural-born citizen, not just a citizen of the United States. Natural-born. That means born of citizen parents in the U.S.
Absolutely. Now, for our listeners on WNJC 1360 AM in the greater Philadelphia area and on the Internet, if you'd like to learn more about this, Commander, you mentioned your blog. Can you briefly say to the audience where they can go on the Internet to see your blog and find out what you're talking about?
All right, for the website of my lawsuit is www.protectourliberty.org. Protect, O-U-R, liberty.org. That's all one word, www.protectourliberty.org. Now, the blog is commanderkirchner.wordpress.com, and commander is abbreviated as CDR, so it's CDRKERCHNER.wordpress.com. And I also want to mention a very good resource site, Article 2 Super PAC. It's ART, number 2, superpac.com. There's a lot of writings there that some of it I've contributed, but tremendous information there on Article 2 of the Constitution, ART2SuperPAC.com.
Okay, excellent. Commander Kirchner, okay, let's briefly touch on Rick Santorum. What's going on with Rick Santorum? Obviously, this is a developing story. Mm-hmm. He's running for the Republican nomination. The way things are developing, who knows what's going to happen with this scene. But what's going on with him regarding, unfortunately, natural-born citizen eligibility?
Well, I think he's maneuvering now maybe for a VP slot, which still has to be natural-born for that. But the point is, I've been calling his office, emailing his office, staff. You go to their website and you use their e-form and their email addresses, and all you get back is donate money. But they don't answer the question for him to provide the documentary evidence that his father, who came from Italy in 1930, with age of seven, became a citizen. He served in the military, but that doesn't mean you become a citizen automatically. You got to still apply. You get, as an honorable discharge from the military, you get to the head of the line. You don't have to wait 5 years, but you still got to apply, and you check the block, honorably discharged from the military. He won't provide the paperwork that his father was a naturalized citizen at the time of Rick's birth in 1958. He's completely ducking this issue, just like Marco Rubio was. And I am the only one. I've had volunteers calling his office. I've had people who are lawyers calling his office, writing him, emailing him. He just has been ignoring it now for over 2 months. So I'm in the process of doing more research, and I might have to go to the National Archive to get the answer.
Well, Commander Kirchner, interestingly, Rick Santorum never misses the opportunity to speak about, which is, it's a legitimate thing to be proud of, the fact that he's a son of immigrants.
That's right.
And he makes that point all the time. But one thing I noticed, and this is not to say that he's necessarily not eligible, that's still to be decided, but he never goes a step further and makes the point that his father came as an immigrant and he was so proud of being in the United States that he couldn't wait to become a citizen. He always stops short of that. Now, there have been articles written that have quoted Rick Santorum's mother saying that his father did, in fact, naturalize. She gives no dates, she gives no places, she gives no details. She doesn't even say that it was necessary, but I believe it. I don't think she even
mentioned. She says she has the papers to prove it. She
doesn't even say whether it was before or after Rick's birth. So there's no details and there's no documentation. And like you said, I know that there's been probably overall, I'd say somewhere between 30 and 40 attempts to contact Rick Santorum, his office, his campaign manager by name, and every phone number we could find. And then I've done it myself personally about six or seven times, and I've reached out to people by name, and I've told them I'm an attorney in New Jersey. I told them exactly what the issue was, and I also told them that we're looking to head off something that could be a problem. If there's no problem, let's get this out of the way. And so far, not one person has gone back to me.
What's the press secretary's name with Santorum? We've been after
Matt Bainin.
Yeah, we personally addressed it to him.
That's a serious issue. It's very serious.
Well, it might be nothing, but it's problematic that they're not being forthcoming with the information.
And Mom may be telling the truth when she says her husband naturalized, but did he naturalize before 1958 when Santorum was born?
Of course, as I was saying before, we have a terrible precedent now with Obama, who refuses to release any of his records of any kind. This is going to become the standard operating
procedure. And now we have Republicans doing the same thing.
Well, this is going to set the trend now for the future, where if you have something that you want to conceal for whatever reason, it's entirely legitimate for you to do that. So this is like having a secret government. But before we continue on this, Commander, I want to ask you, has anything new happened with the Georgia case in the last 24 hours?
Yeah, I did see an email alert came across that the judge is going to issue his ruling tomorrow, Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was an email alert. I don't know the source yet.
I didn't realize that. Didn't
have time to look at it to check the source. But
Let's go through that very
yeah,
briefly
what's
as
that,
well.
This was last,
I think, Thursday. It was January 26th.
Yes, down in Atlanta, Georgia.
An administrative judge heard this. There were three cases presented. It was basically a question of whether Barack Obama should be on the ballot in Georgia, like we discussed, the state election for essentially the presidency, the primary, and then carrying through to the general. And just by way of background, the judge, Malahy, he was going to enter default because the president and his attorney both failed to appear. And
not only did they not appear, they told him,
we're not coming.
He insulted the judge.
Yeah, so anyway, so the Secretary of State basically backed up the judge and said, we're going forward. And the judge was going to enter a default judgment because the defendant, Obama, and his attorney failed to appear. And he did not enter the default judgment because the attorneys on the three cases, which were ultimately presented, at least in part, wanted to present some evidence on the record.
Right.
And they did present, and this is the first time, as we said in the beginning of the show, the first time any evidence has actually been presented. Now, the question is the judge going to rule at a default specifically because the defendants had to appeal? Or is he going to rule on the merits? Or we don't
that's
know.
What we're hoping he rules on the merits that Obama is not a natural-born citizen, which Obama is not a natural-born citizen. His father was a foreign national. Now, but he could just take the less, just let the evidence on the record for possible use for appeals, which
just ruled default.
So it depends on what he decides to do.
So let me ask you guys, the significance of that, of course, is that...
that's going to be a tsunami wave.
Yeah, if he were to just... we're, of course, assuming that he's going to rule in our favor. I mean, we don't know what kind of phone calls...
Well, Obama's lost. I mean, he's not going to be on the ballot.
We know how this system is not functioning, so don't celebrate it.
But the Secretary of State could still not accept the judge's...
Commander, your story for the last hour is a good indication of why we can no longer trust the legal system, unfortunately.
Last week we discussed the electoral system, and that seems to be...
I have faith in the great state of Georgia.
Good for you. Now, if the implications of what you're saying is if the judge rules against Obama just on the fact that they didn't show up, that's one thing. But it is much preferable that the judge rules on the merits. So you're saying that the justice Malahy, it's far more preferable for him to have looked at the evidence.
Absolutely.
Said, based on the evidence, this man is not eligible.
And interestingly, the Jablonski side introduced a copy of the forged birth certificate into the record, attached to a letter to the judge
and to the Secretary of State.
Well, wait a minute.
Now that can be questioned in further court proceedings, and they can demand the original because they opened the door producing a copy of a document that's alleged to be
real. They're going to question the authenticity of that document.
I understand on the rules of court. Now, you're a lawyer. You can tell me. They then would have the right to demand to see the original.
Well, they're going to question the authenticity of that document that was presented.
Well, Billy, let me ask you this as the attorney. Aren't there severe penalties for submitting forgery?
Knowingly, of course, it's perjury.
And of course, Obama has to know what's going on here.
The attorney's going to say he didn't know.
Exactly.
They're all going to say they didn't know.
But the point is, this case is opening up more trapdoors to getting at Obama.
Which is why Barack Obama and his attorneys didn't want anything to come, nothing put on the record. So I think the attorneys on last Thursday did the right thing.
I think Valerie Jarrett in the White House is sweating right about now.
Well, they should all be sweating.
She's probably increasing Obama's medications that he takes, too.
Well, maybe Reggie Love will come back. Maybe Reggie Love will come back.
Valerie Jarrett is Barack Obama's brain. She goes to all the committee meetings and cabinet meetings, and whenever they ask a question of Obama, he looks to Valerie and say, Valerie, what do you think? She's a communist out of Chicago with deep roots to the communist network, and Bill Ayers and those people in Chicago.
So Commander Kirsch,
and she's got it connected to Frank Marshall Davis, who helped raise Obama in Hawaii.
As you may know, Jack Cashel, the investigative reporter who wrote Deconstructing Obama, believes that Frank Marshall Davis is in fact the father of Barack Obama.
Well, that's legally his father, though, on the record, is still...
We'll take what he offers.
But I think the president is being medicated right now. I think I saw a picture one time where a fly was crawling around his face. Now, anybody that was not doped up would slap that fly off
face. You slap that fly, don't you?
Right? I mean, you guys wouldn't let a fly crawl around your face.
Yeah, unless you've got serious...
serious medication.
Wow.
We have...
I mean, they call it medication, but I think it's, you know... I think he's still probably a crackhead.
Okay, so let me just start wrapping this up.
That's a personal opinion.
We have 4 minutes. So the things we're looking for: Rick Santorum to come forward with some kind of documentation, so we could stop wasting our time and discussing this issue regarding Rick Santorum. We want to see that he was in fact, that his father was in fact naturalized before he was born. All they have to do is produce the document. No big deal. This will all go away. All right. So far, they've stonewalled. They haven't done it. That we're waiting for. And obviously, a related story is the Georgia court. And you're saying, Commander Kirsten, that tomorrow the judge is supposed to rule on this. And that's huge. If the judge says that, regardless of whether it's default or whether it's by default or on its merits, that Barack Obama will not be on that, that he's advising the Secretary of State to not be on the ballot.
There are many states waiting to bring similar suits right now. They're watching the Georgia outcome, and I know personally of 3 or 4 cases that are going to be filed immediately, depending on what different states happened in Georgia. Yeah.
By the way,
that comment about crackhead, I know he used crack in the past because he said it in his book. So,
yeah, oh, exactly. You know. Oh, hey, don't worry about that.
So I didn't just make that up out of thin air.
No, that's in Jack Cashel's book, too.
Right.
So let me add, we have 2 minutes approximately. What would you like to see happen with this issue?
I'd like to see the Georgia judge rule that he's not a natural-born citizen based on the evidence, and he's not on the ballot for the primary or the general election in Georgia. And from that, we can segue to other states and get the same ruling. There's a case in Arizona right now, Tennessee. I know there was a filing in Maryland. There could be one in PA here any day now.
Just very briefly, just so we're clear to our audience, that case in Georgia is the evidence that was presented with two tracks. One track was the definition of natural born.
Exactly.
Specifically that you need 2 U.S. citizen parents. The U.S. soil was stipulated we're fine. It was
two cases were on that.
Right, two attorneys presented evidence, legal evidence about the definition of natural born. The third attorney, Orly
Taylor,
presented evidence specifically on the birth certificate and the proposition that Barack Obama, in fact, was not born in Hawaii.
And the Social Security number fraud.
The forgery of the April 27th birth certificate long form that was presented as an authentic copy of the original in Hawaii, which we've yet to see, obviously. There's really two tracks here. One is the forgery fraud of the Social Security number and the long-form birth certificate, and the other is the legal definition of natural born. So you said what you'd like to see happen. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the judge is...
A little broader with the issue, this whole issue, not just Georgia. What do you think...
Obama's days are numbered. The House of Cards is falling down.
Okay. Now, what happens if the judge comes out and says something completely opposite that? I don't know. Throws the case.
Well, I'd like to see the picture of the bloody horse head that he put in his bed.
a reference to mob tactics, actually.
Right.
But we wouldn't be surprised at that. We would be very disappointed. But
it happened in the California case with Judge Carter. He wanted to get the bottom of it, and then the very next hearing, he completely changed his opinion.
Well, having his new law clerk
was an employee of Obama's law firm.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and the story changed in between.
Right.
Let's think that if the Georgia thing comes out the way we don't want it to, there's still other cases going on in other states, as you point out.
That's
so
right.
The battle's not lost.
We got an investigation in Arizona by Sheriff Joe Arpaio and the criminal actions on
exactly.
Up there.
That should be out within
2 weeks.
Isn't that one of the strengths of our Republican form of government?
Exactly. Republican with a small r, please.
Right, exactly. Where each of the states is a sovereign entity unto
That's
itself,
right.
can make its own decisions.
That's right. And we, the people, are the ultimate sovereigns of the states.
Okay, exactly. Well, that's outstanding.
Well, we've been on with Commander Carl Kirchner. He brought the case Kirchner v. Obama in Congress. Case was dismissed by the U.S. Supreme Court. He's still involved in this battle. It's not going away, folks. We're going to continue with this, and until these until these people come forward with the truth, we're not letting up, and neither should you. So it's Billy and Dan out.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Commander Kirchner.